Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back into Sports Daily. Sorry for those watching us on the video stream. We're having just a little bit of a technical issue now. We're flying blind a little bit here. Tommy, can I hear you right now? That is the big question.
I don't know. I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me now? No,
he's got nothing. So we're still working on that. So I know those folks watching on the video stream were having a little bit of an issue there. So bear with us and hang tight while we work through that. The good news is out over the air, you guys can hear me, even though I can't hear Tommy and Brandon. A little inside baseball. Brandon, we've got Kevin Saul here, too, and we'll get him in. He's going to be experiencing, I'm afraid, the same thing I am. So let us work through that. In the meantime, you guys can continue to work through it here for a minute. So, Brandon, again, just kind of continue the conversation you're having there in that last segment.
Yeah, so, what we kind of looked at was this KU win, 91-87, if you missed it. I don't think we even mentioned the final score, taking on UCF last night, a game in which they were favored by 13.5 points. Now we have a little bit of feedback here. So, I think we're all good. You got us there, Jacob? Nope. Jacob still does not got us. But, yeah, so KU, UCF, I mean, it's when you look at the 13.5 point line, there was reasons why a team that won by 51 just a month ago comes in at home, come in a must-win situation against a UCF team because, I mean, UCF, yeah, they lost by 51 against KU just a couple weeks ago. But then you get into the game. No DeJuan Harris, an All-American level point guard, a guy who kind of, I mean, he makes this thing run when you're looking at KU's offense, when you're looking at KU's defense. He's been here for 6-7 years. He's getting everything set in the offense. He's getting everything set in the defense. This is a group mostly outside of him, KJ Adams, and Hunter Dickinson that everyone's new. They're still working through the kinks of just running throughout the Big 12 season. And, just a tricky one. But, hey, you're going to take away with a win. And we are still working through some issues here. But, yeah, just looking through this KU game, they were down by 8 points in the second half. And they had to just kind of manage their way through the game. KJ Adams was kind of a no-show in the first half. He did not have a single shot attempt. He did get to the free throw line at one point, but then just as the game goes along, Zeke Mayo, he was the star of the night, as I said, 24 points in the first segment. Hunter Dickinson, 24 points as well. And then Zeke Mayo just continues to come to life throughout this game. For Badunga, this is a freshman, a five-star freshman comes in. I think a team that has a lot of faith in just kind of how freshmen are able to join the fold and work their way in. And Flory Badunga has just done that from the jump. And then last night, I mean, a perfect example of that. He goes 4 for 5, 11 rebounds, 10 points. But the big thing for a team that had no defensive presence anywhere last night, I mean, he comes away with 5 blocks, which was just huge in the long scheme of things. When you look at a 91-87 game, comes down. I mean, it was a one possession game going into the final minute as well. And Flory Badunga just continues to be a revelation, a guy who is going to be in the mix for a Big 12 Freshman of the Year type of season. It's I'm not going to sit here and say that I follow every other team tooth and nail, because I don't have the time. I don't know who is the key freshman for Houston. I don't know who the key freshman is for, I mean, any of these teams. But, I mean, Flory Badunga has to be playing as well as any freshman in the entire league, especially, I mean, when you look at what has been asked of him. Hunter Dickinson is a 6th or 7th year player. He just doesn't have the legs that he has. He is getting spelled, even though Hunter played 34 minutes last night. But, yeah, Flory Badunga just continues to just play a key role for this team. Hunter Dickinson, again, the way that he was able to get it done last night, he had the 24 points. But getting to the free throw line, this team made a season high of free throws last night. KU did 25, more than they've made in any other game all season long. Hunter Dickinson, a big part in that. He goes 10 for 12. And the way he was able to get it done. Jacob, can you?
Brandon, I'll jump in with you here, just talking, because I can't hear what you're saying, unfortunately, but I think people can hear us collectively over the radio, so we'll take it there. I'll just kind of go through the game for me last night, not knowing exactly what you were saying there. It was an interesting game, and you love it and you feel good about it, I think, that they were able to work through it. But I can't imagine that the lack of DeJuan Harris made that much of a difference defensively for them, and maybe it did. And if it did, that's certainly something to watch. UCF had a good night shooting the three. They made 14 of them. KU had a great night at the free throw line, 25 of 29. You like to see that, certainly, if you're a KU fan, and that's ultimately what, you know, what bailed them out of the game to some degree. But, you know, good for them to be able to get there. If I'll say this, if DeJuan Harris has that big of a defensive impact, I'm glad he never misses any time, because that's pretty significant. And you know, I think he'll be right back, it sounds like, into the game. But man, that's, you know, you wouldn't think that based on what we've seen from Shaq Moore, right? Shaq Moore's kind of been able to play some really good defense. So when we're sitting there before the game and we learn, like, oh man, DeJuan Harris isn't going to play, I never in my wildest dreams would have thought, oh, okay, well, UCF is then going to score 87 points. And I cannot imagine it was all like Harris's absence. That seems crazy to say. So then what was it? And I don't think it's not overly concerning. KU hasn't really been poor defensively ever this season. I know you can look back at the Houston game and the fact that the Cougars got to 92, but remember, that's a double overtime. Before that, if you go back and just look at what they've done defensively, you know, 61, 74, 50, 74 to Iowa State, 40, 55, 48, 61. Like, that's not usually something we see. So I don't put too much stock into that. Like, I don't think that's too much of a concern in the short term, but it's certainly something to watch, and we'll watch it as DeJuan Harris sits back. I do think, though, as we've watched these last handful of games, for, you know, the crowd that has been like KJ Adams and DeJuan Harris, maybe they need to play a few minutes. I think this is kind of what you see when that happens. Like, that's a That's a double-edged sword. Yeah, we want to see a lot of these young players and these other guys step up. But KU is expected to be and is at times really good because they've got, you know, as much experience as any team in the country. And that stuff's important. But they get it done. Look, they get it done against UCF at home. We'd be having a very different conversation today if they didn't find a way to get it done. Now they've got to go on the road and play Baylor and then back here. And so you'll go today's, what is today, Wednesday? So you play Saturday on the road and then quickly back for a big Monday, the late game against Iowa State. That's going to be a little bit of a grind here. So we'll see how they respond to it. They're certainly going to have to be better defensively than they were last night in both of those games, I think, Brandon, if they want to come away with both of those wins. And quite frankly, if KU's going to get to the place we thought that they would be at the beginning of the season, they probably need to win both of these games. And I know that's saying a lot for Iowa State especially, but you got them at home. Like KU's, they've lost their home games, right? Like did you see? I mean, we all watched the game last night. Since 1989 was the last time they lost back-to-back home games. That's insanity. That's crazy. That's how hard it is to win at Allen Fieldhouse. So yeah, when you see Baylor on the road, you see Iowa State at home. You're like, yeah, we ought to win both of those games. And if you're KU and you're trying to still win a Big 12 title, which they certainly are, I feel like you kind of have to have them both at the same time.
Yep, and they still have a big game at Houston that they have late in the season. Going to be a big one to control. We are going to go take a quick break, and hopefully we're going to get these issues resolved. We're all going to join the fold. Tommy's going to be back. We are going to, hopefully Jacob's going to be able to hear us. We will go find out in just a second. Working through some issues here on a Wednesday morning, but we'll be right back here on Sports Day.
The commercials are over.
Yo, I haven't got all day.
869-1240.
Time to get busy.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome back. It's Sports Daily here on KFH. We decided, Brandon and I, together in unison, decided that we were just going to kick our buddy Jacob Albrock to the curb because of all the technical issues that we've been dealing with. So you've got the two of us for the remainder of the program today. And you know, Brandon, look, it's live radio, right? And you work in live TV all time. So it's kind of like rolling with the punches, right?
Yeah, so last year covering the Chiefs playoff run, I went just a fun technical story. Not fun, but it's relatable, I guess you could say. In Buffalo last year, you know, I'm thousands of miles away here from Wichita and go to downtown Buffalo, supposed to have a live shot the Friday night, the first night that I'm there. Hey guys, we're in Buffalo and I'm going to be here all weekend providing coverage for you here on KWCH. We have little live units that we bring up. We turn it on. It did not want to get past the loading screen.
Okay.
And there was we called, it's called Live View. We call them, we call everyone back at the station. It just, there's nothing we can do about it. And it worked fine the next morning. So, yeah, it just happens whenever you work in the business.
Yeah, it does. And you know, for those of you that, you know, don't know the way that we typically put this show together, Jacob Albrock usually does his portion of the show remotely. So Brandon and I are in the KFH studios. Jacob is in a remote location. He couldn't hear us. We could hear him. He was going over the air, but he could not hear what the two of us were saying. So after doing some troubleshooting and, you know, honestly, some pretty poor sounding radio, we decided, you know what, Jacob, you get the morning off. Go enjoy some Prairie Fire coffee.
Exactly.
And kick your feet up. Go enjoy it. Brandon and I, we will take it from here. So we appreciate you hanging on with us, and it'll be the two of us for the remainder of the program today. We've talked a lot about KU, you know, kind of disjointed KU talk for the first 30 minutes of the program, Brandon. But as we shift away from that conversation, let's take a look at Wichita State playing tonight. You know, this is a situation with the Shockers where, you know, North Texas coming in, obviously one of the better teams in the American. And it's been interesting so far because this is a team that has underperformed against opponents in the conference that I think we could all agree, from a talent perspective, inferior to Wichita State.
Definitely.
But then they're playing teams like when they went on the road to Memphis, they played Memphis really, really tight, really close. They've got North Texas tonight, another team that you would think, you know, from a talent perspective, better than Wichita State. What do you think the chances are that Wichita State can actually play North Texas tight like they did against Memphis?
It depends which Wichita State shows up. Is it the team that we saw against Kansas State? Is it the team we saw against Memphis? Or is it the team that we saw against Tulsa? Is it the team we saw against UTSA, probably the most disappointing of these ones? The problem that I have coming around on this, on Wichita State being competitive in this game, is just when you look at the three-point disparity. We've talked about it. The three-point defense has been atrocious for Wichita State, allowing 47% from three, which is unheard of. And then they have a guy named Aiden Wright, who's going to shoot north of 45% from three. They shoot 42% from three as a team in conference play. This is a dangerous North Texas team. Wichita State has the pieces to be competitive with anybody in the league, with a lot of teams even in the country. But matching three-point shooting against a bad three-point defense, if it gets ugly, don't be too surprised.
I mean, just watch the way that they gave up the three against Tulsa.
Yeah.
Right? And Tulsa is not a good three-point shooting team
at all.
And I don't know if you can point the finger at one particular reason why they're defending the three so poorly. I think there are several reasons why they're defending the three so poorly. And I think that some of it is just the lack of being able to close out and have that awareness of where the ball is on the court at all times. And that's a concern in and of itself, but there's that. I think they just, I've watched multiple possessions, especially in that Tulsa game, Brandon, where I think they just lose track of where the ball is and where they are in comparison to the shooter.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot because, this dates back all the way through conference play. I mean, since the opening game in the conference, Paul Mills has talked about bad offense leads to bad defense. Early on, I think they've remedied these issues as far as getting in, taking bad shots. It's going to lead to the break for the other team, disoriented on defense, and then the other team just gets a three. I feel like that portion, they're not taking as bad of shots as they were, I think, 3 weeks ago. Now it just feels like, it's just honestly, what you don't expect from a Paul Mills team. A lot of laziness, just a lot of lack of awareness, and then, just kind of losing what your assignment is. They've had only a couple days to get things figured since they got kind of embarrassed against that Tulsa team on the road. I know Paul Mills just continued to hammer home at it. We're going to continue to hammer home at it as well. Now it's just do the results come, because you have a tough task tonight in the North Texas team that has a whole head of steam and is going to be competing for a spot in the tournament.
Yeah, the last time that North Texas played in the Roundhouse, it was a 12-point victory for the Mean Green against Wichita State. We talked about this briefly on the show yesterday, Brandon, but let's dive into it a little bit more. Taylor Eldridge, of course, the fantastic beat writer for the Wichita Eagle for Wichita State, in his article after the Tulsa game, mentioned some potential forthcoming changes in the lineup for Wichita State, where we could potentially be seeing a youth movement of sorts in this Wichita State lineup with, some of the more heralded young guys on this team, whether we're talking about Zion Pipkin or TJ Williams or others. And it was brought up yesterday. What does that mean for Wichita State in the short term? Is that an indication of the white flag being waved on this season? Is it to see what you've got in guys potentially for next year? Or is it a desperate measure to try to find some kind of combination of lineup to maybe win, as many games as you can this year? And maybe it's a combination of all of that, right? But it's been fascinating for me to try to, and I don't know inside the mind of Paul Mills, I don't know, I can't read his mind, but to try to decipher what the main driving factor is behind potentially seeing some lineup changes.
Yeah, I do want to say it's the latter. I don't think, and no college basketball player, no professional basketball player, no coach is going to just punt on a season, especially in college basketball. That'd be ridiculous, because all you have to do is, in just over 1 month's time, I think win four games in a week and you're dancing, or five, whatever. It depends on the seeding getting the tournament. But we also have to remember that these freshmen, while we haven't seen anything from T.J. Williams, we haven't seen a whole lot from Zion Pipkin yet. They haven't had expanded roles. We haven't seen T.J. Williams even get to play. These are still guys that were around top 150 players in the country who could have gone a lot of places, a lot of high level programs, and instead, because of Zion Pipkin in the pace, in the case of his relationship with P.J. Cousinard, he comes to Wichita State. T.J. Williams wanted to stay home and be part of this program from Heights. He picks this program. These are guys that could have gone and played just about anywhere in the country. And so they're talented guys. Now it's time for Paul Mills to show why he brought them here. It's time for them to show why they are here. How much they do play, I don't know. It's expanded roles. Yeah. Does that mean 12 minutes? Does that mean we see them play 25?
Right.
That remains to be seen, but if it's them waving the white flag on the season, that's ludicrous.
I think that the two questions that come to my mind, and again, it's going to depend upon what we see tonight as far as the rotation is concerned, but what comes to my mind, number one, is what does this tell us about the timing of this decision? When, and I get it, look, like, this program is down. It's down in the dumps right now. It's been a disaster, at least of a conference season so far for Wichita State. 1-6 in conference play as of right now. But, you know, apparently, and according to Taylor Eldridge, there we could start seeing some of these guys that we haven't seen much of, potentially as early as tonight against one of the better teams in the American. Like, what does that tell you about the timing of it when it's, you know, you're not seeing them against the lower-tiered conference teams. You're seeing them against a North Texas team. That's number one. And then number two, what does it tell you about the veterans on this team? What does it tell you about the lack of trust, I guess, or the lack of happiness or satisfaction or contentment that Paul Mills has on the veterans on this team, the guys that have been here for 4 or 5 years plus? What does it tell you about them when all of a sudden we're almost halfway through conference play, it's not even February yet, and now there's major conversations about switching up the lineups and switching up the rotations?
Yeah, it's also one thing for there to be conversations. It's another for the plan to be put into action. That's what we will find out tonight at 6:30. It is interesting that it's all leading up to this North Texas game again, the difficult one. Yeah, on one hand, North Texas doesn't know how to prepare for T.J. Williams,
sure.
Zion Pipkin, Henry Thangvall, Joy. They don't know how to prepare for them. I mean, we also don't know what to expect from them when we see them on the floor. So that's one thing, at least from a fan and a media perspective. They obviously work through all these situations in practice. If they take the floor, they'll have some sort of familiarity with each other. Not going in just completely blind. But then when you talk about these older guys, we touched on it yesterday. I mean, this is one of the oldest and most experienced rosters in all of college basketball. It was never supposed to be anywhere near this. So if we are talking about benching, sitting guys longer than they should, where does that begin? Because I don't think it starts with Xavier Bell.
Right.
I think he's been the most consistent player on this team. I don't think it starts with Quinty Ballard. I don't think it starts with Ronnie DeGray.
It's got to start with Bijan Cortez, probably.
And I mean, Justin Hill's offense hasn't been the same. He hasn't been as good defensively. He was their best player for the first 3 weeks of the season.
Corey Washington has brought you some offense, but I'm not sure. Yeah. You know, I don't exactly know what is his role in question. I think it's all very, very intriguing, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, and the only way we're going to learn is by seeing what that plan, what the fruition of these talks, these plans are behind the scenes. Tonight, yeah, I mean, Harlan Beverly, he's either your best player or he's having 7 turnovers in a night as well. He's a super talented guy from Miami. It is just an absolute shame when you look at it. I mean, this season was 8-1, picked top 4 in the conference. You're thinking they have a chance to compete for a conference championship after they beat a Minnesota team. And then it all kind of started with this DePaul game, and you beat Kansas State, who, I mean, we look back on it now, Kansas State's not good.
Yeah.
And, it's just all falling apart. So, yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows? I'm intrigued.
Yeah, I think that it's I've thought about this a lot. There is a very, very fine line between pushing the right buttons, pulling the right levers to find combinations that work that's a good thing, I think, to try to tweak and figure out what will happen. There's a fine line between that and blowing the whole thing up. And I think everything is kind of teetering on that line right now. I think it's been teetering on this line for a while, to be quite frank. Even the one lone conference victory for Wichita State at home, that was the Charlotte game, right?
Yeah. Yep.
That wasn't like it wasn't like it was a super impressive victory. It wasn't like they curb stomped Charlotte. Charlotte was in the game, late in the game, right? And so even the one lone conference victory hasn't been all that impressive against a bottom feeder team in the American. And so, again, I get the temptation. I get the thought about pressing all the right buttons, pulling all the right levers, finding some combination that works. You got to be really careful because that can very quickly cross over into the territory of everything is upside down, turned over on its head, and all of a sudden we're seeing reserve guys that maybe aren't ready for the role that they're in playing extended minutes in a game, and then all of a sudden you're like, man, maybe there is the white flag being waved on this season.
Yeah, that Charlotte game was a 5-point game in the final 2 minutes, and they're going to win that game by 9. And then Wichita State fans, if you're really attached to social media like I know a lot of you are, this is still one that gets brought up on my Twitter feed to this day. And I mean, this Charlotte game happened just about a month ago, because that's a game where after the win, Paul Mills came in the press conference and he said, and I asked, it was a difficult week because they lost on the road. I think it was at UTSA earlier, just a couple days prior. Then they had almost a whole week off, return home, play Charlotte. And I asked Paul Mills, how difficult was this week for you guys? Because you were flat out embarrassed a week ago. And he said, I learned about my team that we don't have snowflakes. Snowflakes, they don't fall to heat. They don't melt. And okay. it's kind of crazy looking back at that now, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, whatever it is. And
have they melted? You know, like I think it's a fair question at this point.
Exactly.
Have they melted? And we'll find out tonight. Again, like at the very top of this discussion, the conversation was, hey, they played Memphis on the road and played them tight, had a chance to win that game, right? Now they've got another really good team in the conference. You've got an opportunity here at least to try to quiet the crowd a little bit. We'll see what happens. It's going to be a tough matchup for Wichita State. All the coverage tonight begins at 5:30 over on KEYN. Shocker basketball in North Texas. You can catch it right here on the Odyssey family of networks. That's going to do it for a very eventful hour number one on Sports Daily. We'll be right back for hour two. Tommy Caster, Brandon Zinner coming right back.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's hour number two of Sports Daily here on KFH. I'm Tommy Caster, along with Brandon Zinner with you on this Wednesday. A big thank you to one of our great sponsors of the program, Crestview Country Club. Brandon, I know you're an avid golfer yourself. The weather, at least yesterday, today, I mean, we're getting very close to that. It's probably okay to go out and play golf.
I keep looking at this afternoon. I might make it out in a couple hours.
Really?
We'll see. I might go walk nine holes. I might go swing the clubs. I mean, I've got an itch. It's been almost a month. I think Christmas Eve was my last round.
Yeah, I saw this weekend, maybe on Sunday, the high is supposed to get up to like 60-something, like low 60s. Mm-hmm. To me at that point, and it, you know, I'm sure by that point, all the snow and ice that we've had is probably going to be melted away and all that. This weekend is going to be a great time to try to get out and play some golf. And like I mentioned, big thanks to Crestview Country Club. They've got a bunch of things going on there at the club. Even when the weather is not great to play golf, you can definitely go and enjoy the dining room. You can enjoy all the events and everything they have going on out there. So make sure to check them out if you're looking to join a place like Crestview Country Club. We appreciate their support of the program. Brandon, as we get into hour number two here on Sports Daily on this Wednesday, let's talk a little bit about the coaching carousel in the NFL. There's one head coach opening still out there, and that's the New Orleans Saints. Yesterday, the announcement came down from Mike McCarthy that he is removing himself from any kind of head coaching consideration this cycle and that he'll jump back in 2026. I found that interesting because I don't feel like there had been much smoke around Mike McCarthy going to New Orleans. So he made the announcement that he wasn't going to be pursuing any head coach openings, and I'm like, okay, neither am I. So I guess I'll make an announcement too. I don't think he was ever going to be the head coach of the New Orleans Saints. It looks like Kellen Moore, as of right now, is maybe the leader in the clubhouse.
Yeah, which is interesting because who did everybody want to hire Kellen Moore? What fan base wanted Kellen Moore about a couple years ago?
The Cowboys.
When he was their offensive coordinator. And then he leaves. I believe he went to the Chargers. It didn't work out. Brandon Staley. That whole fiasco, and then he's obviously been with Philadelphia, and make what you want of Kellen Moore. He's been wherever there's been a lot of talent, he has succeeded. I still have my opinions about Kellen Moore, but yeah, the Mike McCarthy thing, very interesting to come out and say, yeah, I'm waiting, I'm taking a year off, which is interesting because exactly what happened whenever he got let go by the Packers, he took a year off,
right.
He did the whole, I think it was Tom Pelissero did the story on him. It was like, oh, yeah, he has a whole coaching staff making up fake rods. They're basically playing a Madden season in his basement. I'm sure that we're probably going to talk about the same exact thing again come next January. I think Mike McCarthy is a good coach.
I like Mike McCarthy. And you know what? I think this can very easily, if you're an avid listener of this program, and you hear our buddy Jacob Albrecht, whenever he talks Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys, and he's a Dallas Cowboys fan through and through, he hates Mike McCarthy. And so anytime you listen to this program, you probably are like, man, this is a Mike McCarthy hater show. I like Mike McCarthy. I think Mike McCarthy got an unfair shake in Dallas because of the way that organization is ran at the top of Jerry Jones, the fact that he was saddled with a guy like Dak Prescott. Do I think that Mike McCarthy would have led them to a championship? Absolutely not. But I don't think that's Mike McCarthy's fault.
No. I mean, who has done that in Dallas
Jimmy
Johnson. The last 30 years?
Yeah. Like, right? Like,
no,
like,
one in the last 30
literally
years.
Literally, that's it. And so I felt like it wouldn't necessarily matter who was going to be the head coach. You could put Bill Belichick in there in Dallas, and I'm not convinced that Bill Belichick could have led the Cowboys to a championship just because of the way that organization is structured from the top. And did you get a chance, while we're on the topic of Dallas, did you catch any of Brian Schottenheimer's introductory press conference with Jerry Jones?
It's funny that you say that because I have it. One of my goals today, it's an off day from KWCH. One of my goals for today is to go back and watch these coaching interviews because I've seen the Brian Schottenheimer stuff going around. I haven't got to dive into it. The Liam Cohen stuff from Jacksonville yesterday looks very
bizarre.
Very, very bizarre. Kind of reminds me of Dan Campbell and Nick Sirianni, who got clowned after their press conferences. I'm going to dive into some of these coaching interviews and at least watch good chunks because, one, they're always super interesting, and two, you can start to form opinions on these guys. I don't know a whole lot about Brian Schottenheimer other than, obviously, his father, Marty. So yeah, I'm intrigued to go into it, but it looks like a lot of people have opinions, and yeah, you're going to when you see someone sitting next to Jerry Jones for an hour.
Yeah, I wish, and I'm I should have had this prepped ahead of time. I wish that I had the Liam Coen Duval. I mean, I feel bad for the guy because it's like out of context. Like you get 5 seconds of him saying Duval in a really weird and bizarre way, but then you don't hear anything else about his introductory press conference, his philosophies. Like I don't know anything else about him other than just the fact that apparently he's a weirdo in the way that he says Duval.
Yeah, and I was listening to other sports talk nationally yesterday, and they talked about that clip, and then they relayed it to Nick Sirianni when he was hired. He basically said, oh, we're going to come in. We're going to have plans. We are going to take notes. We're going to have books. And people are like, well, yeah, no crap. You're an NFL coach. Of course you're going to have plans, and you guys are going to do stuff.
Yeah.
But usually it's the weirdos who get the most buy-in. I mean, Mike McDaniel's even kind of a weirdo in his own way. At least he has like a little bit of a swag, you could say. I think Liam Coen probably still has a chance to be pretty good with Jacksonville. I mean, most of that's going to depend on his quarterback, I think, not him. But yeah, well, Mike McCarthy, the year off, it's interesting when you kind of look at the landscape of the NFL and potential good head coaching openings. Depending on what happens in Buffalo, I think it'd still be a mistake for them to probably move off of Sean McDermott, but that could easily be a hot topic one for Mike McCarthy's name to get thrown around. Maybe a Cleveland or a Cincinnati as well with Kevin Stefanski and Zach Taylor. If things don't get turned around up in there with Cincinnati, I'd probably be winning multiple playoff games. Cleveland, if they just have another atrocious season, who knows with the Pittsburgh Mike Tomlin stuff, how long that's going to last. But other than that, it doesn't look like there's many enticing potential openings. Who would be on the hot seat? Maybe Sean McVay goes and decides to retire. It's been rumored for a couple years now, potentially. But you want to go, if you're Mike McCarthy, you want to go where there's already something established, already a quarterback established, a culture established, especially at that age. There's not a whole lot of options out there for you.
Let me ask you this, going back to the Cowboys situation with Brian Schottenheimer. How would you feel if you are Brian Schottenheimer and it's your introductory press conference and you, it's been just discussed at length about how poor of a hire this was by Jerry Jones. And, you know, all of a sudden you're Brian Schottenheimer. You've never been, like, you've been in the NFL for a long time. Your dad's Marty. Like, you've been around the block, but you've never been in this scenario before as the head coach of America's team. And you're roundly criticized as the guy that Jerry chose. You're in your press conference. Jerry Jones is sitting right next to you. And he says things like, this is as big of a risk you can take. As big of a risk as you can take. No head coaching experience. How do you think Brian Schottenheimer feels in that moment as he's hearing that with his new boss sitting right next to him the very first time he's in front of the media?
After the cha-ching that goes in his bank account, then I would start to feel, it feels like just a lose-lose situation. Who knows? Maybe it works out. I don't think it's going to when you have a guy like Dak Prescott who's making, I think,
$60 million or whatever. Yeah.
His cap hit next year is like, if they cut him or trade him, it's like $95
million. Yeah.
It's absurd. You got to feel for Brian Schottenheimer because he's being just set up to be absolutely clowned, and it's a lose-lose situation. Everyone is in the Jerry Jones era of the Cowboys because, I mean, there's talk of, is Brian Schottenheimer really coaching this team? Is it Jerry Jones who's behind the scene and saying, I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry Jones gives him a list of plays and said, this is what you're going to go out and call. It doesn't surprise me in the slightest, knowing just who Jerry Jones is and seeing this go on for decades. But if you're Brian Schottenheimer, you're probably walking out. You're not going to say it to Jerry Jones, but you're probably going home and telling your wife and kids, like, what the heck was that today?
Right. I'm thinking to myself, did I actually sign the contract? Like, have I signed it yet? Is there any way I can get out of it?
Get out of it?
Anything that I can do to I can't even imagine in my mind, like, having a press conference in my first day on the job, a high-pressure job, a job that everybody is looking at me at, and the entire country watching me, because either they're a diehard fan of mine or they hate my team's guts, because it's one or the other with the Cowboys. You're either diehard or you hate them. Like, there's very little in-between ground with the Dallas Cowboys. So everybody's watching you, and to have your boss, and that's the other thing, by the way, is that if you listen to this show, you'll probably think that this is a Jerry Jones love fest show because, again, our buddy Jacob Albrecht loves Jerry Jones. I personally don't. I think that he's the key reason why the Cowboys haven't won a championship in 30 years. But you've got your boss sitting next to you, and he says what I just mentioned, what I said before. But then he goes on to say, let me share something with you. With all of that, you just heard him reference his osmosis, his family. Anybody in this room that doesn't believe the apple doesn't go far from the tree has missed it someplace down the road, especially if there was an effort to make it that way, and there was an effort. What? That, I don't understand any, like, osmosis?
Is that English?
What are you talking about, Jerry? What in the world are you talking about? You think Brian Schottenheimer is going to win games for the Cowboys because of osmosis?
If anything, Jerry, that's funny because Jerry's kind of just taking digs at himself and he doesn't realize it.
He's taking digs at himself. He's taking digs at his new coach that he wants people to think is going to win a bunch of games. It makes no sense at all. Man, thoughts and prayers to Brian Schottenheimer. He has turned himself into a sympathetic character in less than 24 hours. All right, we're continuing on. Sports Daily coming right back. Hang on.